This podcast is for general educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered medical, practice management, legal, investment, or other professional advice. No one should act or refrain from acting based on this podcast without obtaining appropriate professional advice.
Interventional endoscopy is a really sub-specialized portion of gastroenterology and in some ways oncology as well. And for it to exist, we have to have the infrastructure that Dr. Krishnan talked about. But a big goal of mine, a big reason to transition from a large tertiary, almost academic or large health system environment is patients need access to care and they want access at their fingertips, just like they have access to knowledge or many other services. And to do that, we have to reach a sense of democratization and socialization so that individuals can receive this care in a much more large scale format. And that's what happens in large private practices, which are treating people in the communities.
Welcome to Gastro Broadcast, presented by TissueCypher from Castle Biosciences. I'm your host, Michael Weinstein. My guests today are Dr. Prashant Krishnan and Neil Sharma of Pete Gastroenterology Associates in Colorado. I'm excited to speak with both of our guests today about how private practices can deliver interventional endoscopy and endoscopic oncology care outside of health systems or academic settings. Dr. Krishnan, Dr. Sharma, welcome to Gastro Broadcast. So we usually start our podcast, most of us start by just trying to get to know our guests a little bit. Dr. Krishnan, how did you choose a career in medicine and gastroenterology and then the interventional component?
Well, I knew I wanted to be a doctor by age 4. I loved my pediatrician and the doctor visits were never scary. And I really love math and science. And so I also like helping other people. And medicine was my path from a very young age. Right around 7th grade, I was thinking about neurosurgery, loved the mind, loved how it works, very logical, clear pathways. And then during my 4th year of medical school, I did a neurosurgery rotation. I really loved the subject, but for whatever reason, the people I was around, I didn't care for that sort of interaction. But I really enjoy doing things with my hands. I like thinking through stuff. When you think of a traditional doctor, you're thinking of someone that acts like a detective. And so I chose internal medicine for that detective component, and GI really is the most procedure-heavy field within internal medicine. And that's why I chose gastroenterology. It covers really a broad base of symptoms and organs. And so it gave me the ability to think through patients, figure out what's going on with them, and also to intervene with them using procedures.
Yeah, it's a very common course into our careers. Dr. Sharma, how about your path into gastroenterology?
Well, I would have to say mine's rather different than Dr. Krishnan. I actually was a history major in undergraduate with a minor in philosophy and English. I didn't take any breaks from that. I went straight after that undergraduate experience directly into medical school. I had some exposure to medicine. My mother is a radiologist, so I had some exposure there. My father's an engineer. But I was really history-oriented in terms of enjoying people and stories about people. And that's what gravitated me more towards the fine arts. But from there, I think there was a natural transition to medicine, particularly when you get into clinical rotations. So by year 3, when I had an opportunity to directly interact with patients, I felt the calling that I think many of us feel as physicians, that desire to go serve others is really what drives us. It pushes us to do extra hours. It pushes us to take on more training and hopefully helps us to advance our field in whatever ways we can contribute.
That's great. Dr. Krishnan, Pete Gastroenterology Associates is building an interventional GI practice. Is it possible to deliver that kind of practice outside of a health system, an academic institution, without that support?
Yeah, I think it's most definitely possible to deliver interventional GI care outside of health systems and academic institutions, but there are certain caveats to this. Most independent practices are led by physicians who don't have a background in business, and many groups are only interested in outpatient care at their endoscopy centers because this is where we can maximize revenue. And in an environment that disincentivizes independent practices more and more through regulation and financial cuts and reimbursement, of course it's important to maximize revenue. However, sometimes it is difficult to look beyond the endoscopy center to truly partner with a local hospital to do interventional GI the proper way, providing patients with the highest level of care, the care that those patients deserve. So to do interventional correctly, Some of the things that you need are as follows. You need a highly talented interventionalist who is also entrepreneurial. It's why we brought Neil Sharma to our practice and why we have Doug Adler at this practice and other interventional doctors. You need a hospital partner who will also invest in the infrastructure, staff, and equipment to support that endoscopist. You need a group, a total group that sees the value in full spectrum care for these patients, including all outpatient and inpatient care. And you need to be willing to do some basic EOSs and outpatient facilities in order to drive value to the patients and to the entire system at large. But you also need to create meaningful relationships in the community to earn their trust and advocate for these types of changes away from status quo to something that's going to be better and more positive for patients, both from a clinical perspective as well as a monetary value perspective.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've given this a lot of thought. Dr. Sharma, Parshad basically said you're the business guy. What are some of the barriers to highly specialized medical care in private practice? And what are some of the potential opportunities? How do we overcome these barriers?
Well, Dr. Weinstein, I would say first and foremost, you know, our leadership structure comes down from the chief medical officer, which is Dr. Krishnan. He has a great business sense. You know, it'd be giving me a lot of credit to say that I'm in that realm. I was formerly an administrator in this prior role. So I was president of our Cancer Institute for a mid-sized $2.7, $2.9 billion health system. And I helped create a destination cancer institute at that particular setting. It was nice to work at a not-for-profit hospital-based setting as a transition from my training as an interventional endoscopist. What I say it's nice, what was nice about that is it allowed me to enter a facility that was robust. It had a large infrastructure that could refer for very subspecialized care. So care that lives on top of already the subspecialty of GI or medical oncology or surgical oncology in the realm of the work that I did. So it was a nice entryway to understand how to set up programs in terms of the logistics, the operational functionality, how to best service patients, how to create quality, and to develop research programs that advance the field. I think though, we're at a very interesting time socially, and a lot of this has relevance in terms of how we utilize or access knowledge. And because of iPhones and the internet, everyone has access to knowledge. So it's become a democratization of knowledge for all of us, right? We're all able to access that knowledge, whether it's right or wrong through Dr. Google or so on. We have a plethora of access to knowledge and information that we never were able to have access to before. However, you know, coming from a father who is an engineer, where they approach problem sets as how can we constantly evolve and move things forward, I think in medicine, we've been a bit antiquated in that. And when I say that, what I mean by that is we get taught a lot of memorization in medical school through that process because we have mentors and individuals that teach us how things are done. And only in the past, 10 years or so, 15 years that we've gone to electronic medical records and started to adopt some of the things that we would utilize in our everyday life. But why this is relevant to interventional endoscopy. Interventional endoscopy is a really sub-specialized portion of gastroenterology and in some ways oncology as well. And for it to exist, we have to have the infrastructure that Dr. Krishnan talked about. But a big goal of mine, a big reason to transition from a large tertiary, almost academic or large health system environment is patients need access to care and they want access at their fingertips, just like they have access to knowledge or many other services. And to do that, we have to reach a sense of democratization and socialization so that individuals can receive this care in a much more large-scale format. And that's what happens in large private practices, which are treating people in the communities. So the goal of Dr. Krishnan, GCP, peak gastroenterology, is to really take that care that has been isolated, where people had to travel for that care. And many times, in the state of a devastated cancer where they're not feeling well, they're getting chemotherapy, radiation, they have other debilitations, or maybe they don't have the socioeconomic means. And he's trying to put that infrastructure in communities where people have greater access. And for me, that was a calling, and that was an easy way for me to transition with the hope and aspiration to deliver that to many individuals.
I think in this day and age, it's really important that private practices and independent practices really not only survive, but thrive for several reasons. One is, private industry is where you're going to see a lot of innovation and creativity. It's always the private sector that's going to innovate the most. And when something isn't working inside of an organization and you have direct ownership in it, you're going to find ways to fix that quickly because it's yours. You feel a sense of ownership and accountability over it. And so you always want to think outside of the box, maximize efficiency, maximize value. That's not to say it can't be done in an academic institution, but there are just a lot of layers in academic institutions, and it really takes someone with an internal drive and a special mindset like what Dr. Sharma has to do that inside of an academic institution. The private sector also provides low cost and highly efficient care, saving patients money and also time, and saving the system money as well. An independent physician also, when they have their own practice, they want to help these patients because they have a sense of rapport and connection to these patients. And so a lot of times patients may need help with financial issues, and it's up to the physician to make that choice when they own the practice. But in an academic institution, that choice may not be the physician's. Physicians also can decide the culture of what's important to them inside of the practice. Do I want to work excessively? Do I want a little bit more time off to spend with my family? Do I have certain areas of interest in GI that I'm interested in? Or what we were talking about, do I want to provide the full spectrum of care, or do I just want to focus on general GI outpatient care? It also increases competition, and competition is always good for the patient. The patient always wins with competition. You have choice. You're basically competing for their business. So I think that's good as well. Improving access, we talked about. And it keeps low acuity patients in a low acuity setting, and only the high acuity patients need to end up in a high acuity center like a hospital. The other thing is, instead of being a cog in a wheel when you're in a large academic institutions, physicians maintain very close relationships with their patients when it's their practice. And the patients, if they have any issues with the practice, the physician's gonna hear about it, and it bothers them because it's theirs, they know about it. And so an independent practice is far more agile than most academic institutions because of the different layers that they have, whereas independent practices, usually those decisions can be made within hours, maybe days, a week at the longest. So I think it's really, really important that we need to look at independent practices as something that needs to be actively thought about in a meaningful way, because it's really dwindling in the last 20 years. Most GI practices were independent probably 20 years ago. It's completely flipped because it's been very difficult to survive in a highly regulated market such as ours. So I think this really needs to be thought through properly.
Well, it certainly sounds like you found a great home. Tell me a little bit about the community. What's the population that the practice draws from? And is there any competition or competitiveness with an academic institution in your region?
So the population, Peak Gastroenterology Associates, it started in Colorado Springs, and the total population of Colorado Springs plus the surrounding areas right now is probably about 720,000. That's including all of the surrounding areas. And it's one of the fastest, if not the fastest growing city in the state of Colorado. But Peak Gastroenterology expanded beyond Colorado Springs to some of the cities south of us towards the New Mexico border. And then we expanded north of us into the Denver and the surrounding areas as well. And because of this large scale growth that the founder, Dr. Buck Patel, and I had, we outgrew our ability to maintain everything on our own. So in 2019, we actually partnered with a private equity partner to form GastroCare Partners. And since the inception of GastroCare Partners, we've actually grown into a second state, into Wyoming. And shortly you'll be hearing about two other states that we will be entering into. But the point of this is, like Dr. Sharma said, you want to improve access, but you want to maintain quality while growing. And so to do that, you need a capital partner, especially in this day and age, in order to be able to have the infrastructure necessary for that type of growth. You also need to have the infrastructure in terms of your executive team that can do a lot of stuff during the day while you're still a physician taking care of patients from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. You may be on call, you may have to go in at night. And so we still are involved in so much of the administration of the company. But now you have a whole team supporting you so that they're working while you're being a doctor, and then you can catch up with them at the end of the day and take care of a lot of the other administrative duties as well.
That sounds so similar to several other regions around the country, and obviously we're all familiar with some of the regional platforms that have formed in gastroenterology. I think you're right. I tell people, they used to say medicine is not a science. Medicine's not an art either. Medicine's a business, and it really does need business people to do that. And in your dealing with hospitals, specific hospitals, is Peak collaborating with hospitals so that the hospital is providing not just maybe people resources, but financial support for Peak to cover the hospital, to cover the interventional needs? Are they helping?
Yes. So Peak Gastroenterology Associates and GastroCare Partners, our approach to patients are, if you come to us, we need to be able to take care of every part of your digestive health care. All of it, whether it's outpatient, whether it's inpatient, whether it's, you're 18 years old or you're 80 years old, we want to be able to take care of all aspects of your digestive care. There are some things that private practices do exceptionally well in terms of cost efficiency and in terms of value. The outpatient endoscopy center is phenomenal, but there are also some things that hospitals do extremely well. And when you're really, really sick and you need that inpatient level of care, this is when the hospital becomes necessary. And in addition to that, some of the complex interventional stuff that Dr. Sharma will talk about, a lot of that stuff must be done in a hospital because of how sick these patients are, because of how complex the procedures are. So it's really important, if you want to provide that level of care, to have partnerships with hospitals and health systems. And the hospitals that we work with across the state and in Wyoming as well, they have partnered with us at very meaningful levels in not only providing the GI departments and the necessary staff, but also investing heavily in the equipment so that Dr. Sharma, Dr. Adler, and the other interventionalists can actually do the types of procedures that need to be done. And it's not all concentrated only in one facility, maybe in Denver, but now you can provide that level of care in Colorado Springs and in another place in Denver. And what Dr. Sharma hopes to do is being able to democratize that. So provide that across our entire platform in multiple cities and multiple states.
So Dr. Sharma, looking out over the next 2 to 5 years, where are independent gastroenterology practice headed, and how much are we going to get involved in cancer care?
I can tell you what my aspirations are, and that is to continue the work that I've done in the past relevant to performing novel and complex therapies endoscopically. Those therapies are extremely important, particularly when we're trying to look at the cost of care. If you look at the cost of care in the United States and compare that to Western Europe or Japan, for instance, the number of dollars that we spend per year's lived is significantly higher without having necessarily a better longitudinal life expectancy. And that's important, right? Because it comes into factoring sustainability. Interventional endoscopy provides us novel solutions to the utilization of new technologies so we can create minimally invasive, less morbid options for patients that were traditionally done through open laparoscopic or robotic surgeries. There are many examples of this. Some of the latest work that I've particularly been involved with, including clinical trials, would be the drainage of the gallbladder, for example, for patients who are non-surgical candidates. So traditionally, those patients would either get a highly morbid surgery, where they have an open surgery, have a long recovery time, etc., or they may be declared never possible for having that type of cholecystectomy, so they'd be living with a percutaneous drain. We now have the ability to take an endoscopic ultrasound, isolate the gallbladder, cut through the duodenum or stomach into the gallbladder, and create a lumen-opposing stent that creates an internal ostomy. So therein, they never require that gallbladder to be excised. It's a great option. It does not have a separate CPT code, so you start to run into the logistics of, how do we get reimbursed for this complex procedure? But again, being a bit of an optimist and an idealist, perhaps, my goal is to socialize that and democratize that. So the first steps to that was to show that this was efficacious, that this is possible. We were involved with an FDA trial, and when I was in Indiana, we were the highest enrolling site for that trial, so it's now on FDA label. But we need an environment like the environment that's provided by Dr. Krishnan and GCP, where we can really socialize that procedure and it can be offered everywhere. And they can't exist only in ivory towers, because then we're not doing our job, right, as healthcare providers.
Dr. Sharma, you've had an interesting career. What advice would you give to young fellows about the career path that they'll choose? What would your advice be? How do they get involved in research? How do they get involved in in things that you've become involved in?
Yeah, I was on a very interesting conversation call with one of my friends who's transitioning between practices in the Northeast, and he was talking quite a bit about what does academia mean now. So, right, academia traditionally meant that you were trying to get a tenured professorship, that you had a research track, and you were developing certain papers and trials and trying to advance the science. As healthcare systems have consolidated, academia has morphed quite a bit. And so there is quite a bit of change in terms of how that is supported and set up. For myself, I think it really means defining what your passion is. And for young individuals who are in training or perhaps just coming out of training, they have to define where their priorities and aspirations are. For myself, that requires me to do research. It requires me to push the envelope in terms of involving myself in clinical trials that allow us to advance the science of interventional endoscopy. That might not hold true for everyone. You know, by getting involved with healthcare, there's a variety of facets where you can have an effect and have a downstream positive impact. And so that could be being involved in administration for some individuals. It could be involved in entrepreneurship through starting private practices. It could be involved in direct patient care. All of those are all reasonable aspects for individuals to get involved in. They have to define what's meaningful and important to them. And most importantly, once you know what's important to you, you want to surround yourself with individuals who are like-minded but have different aspects to which that they find interesting so you can work symbiotically. And I think GCP has that environment. They have individuals who want to be clinicians. They have individuals who are entrepreneurial. They have individuals who want to do research. And they have different subspecialties. As you know, in GI, we have such a diversification of what we treat. Think about cardiologists. There's so many subspecialties in cardiology, right? There's electrophysiologists. There's interventional cardiologists. There's structural cardiologists. There's individuals doing transplant. We have a myriad of organs that we treat. So I can only imagine that GI will continue to diversify, creating new and new opportunities for everyone.
Dr. Sharma, Dr. Krishnan, I want to thank you for joining Gastro Broadcast. It's been my pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Winsey.
Michael, thank you for having us. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Gastro Broadcast. Find new episodes through Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix. For information about our hosts, guests, and supporters, visit gastrobroadcast.com.
Produced by Steadfast Collaborative.